Blog Talk Radio.
Listen, good evening to my brothers and my sisters out there. This is Nate Dunlap. We're here going live once again for the third week in a row. We're talking about financial checkup for leaders. This is part of our monthly series on the PRF table. I'm your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap. And we have with us none other than Major Darrell Carson, who was gracious enough to be with us the last 2 weeks. He's here again with us for another week. He is definitely a leader. He is one that I can call somebody who knows what they're talking about. And I must tell you that whenever you have individuals that are talking to you about information or subjects that are a little bit complicated sometimes, they're difficult to deal with sometimes, you want to have individuals who you can actually say 100%, you know what, they know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Listen, sometimes I know we get excited, we get emotional, especially those of us as religious leaders. The spirit moves and says what it says, how it says it sometimes. But when you're educating folk, this thing is not about emotions. This thing is strictly about what can we teach you. And if we can teach you some things out of the Word of God, we are doing what we've been called to do. So without further ado, I just want to welcome Brother Darrell Carson once again to the PRF table. Brother Carson, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic, Dr. Dunlap. How about you?
I'm good. I don't know if we can hear you as clear as we want to hear you tonight, but I'm going to ask those who are watching us on Facebook Live not only to share this, because this is going to be a really good show tonight, but also just let us know how well you hear Brother Carson. I know you can hear me because I got a big mouth, but I want to make sure everybody can hear you, Brother Carson. So, Brother Carson, it's been a wonderful 3 week or 2 weeks so far. We have really been digging in when it comes to this financial checkup for leaders. We have given those who have been watching or listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, you have been receiving some information. You have been receiving what God has given to us. And I promise you, if you apply some of the tools, some of the things that we've listed out on this financial checklist for leaders, I promise you it will do some wonders in your life. You know, you can't do what certain people do if you don't understand what they've done to get there, bro. So give us a little bit. I want to come to you, Brother Carson, and just talk to us, if you will, about why this conversation, why this dialogue is really, really needed about financial checkup for leaders.
Well, like I said, we were talking over the past couple of weeks about how, you know, you have to, one, make sure that you emulate what you are trying to get people to do. Because the thing about people, the same way with your kids, is that you can't be – the kids may not pay attention to what you say, but they will pay attention to what you do. And that's in leadership. If you are going to set the standard and begin to talk to people about finances, then you need to step it. I mean, even in the Bible, you mentioned about there were certain rules or things that were suggested about what you need to have to be a deacon in the church. Well, if you got to have a requirement to be a deacon in the church, running your house well, which would include money, now again, that's one of the implied tasks, then certainly
hey, bro, hold
if
on.
You are...
Bro, Carson.
Go ahead.
Somehow
yes.
You're fading out on us.
All right, let's try this. Y'all have to forgive me being up here in the mountains, foothills of Fort
okay.
McClellan. Can you hear
you
me better
right now?
Yeah,
you real
okay.
good right now.
All right, so The thing being is that if the requirements to be a deacon or elder in church are about like doing being able to run your household, which let's just call it ain't just about cleaning, that is financially what you're doing with the resources God has blessed you with, then certainly the requirement to pastor or to be a shepherd of an entire flock would require you to have that at least the financial aspect. Now, I know some people, everybody's not going to be perfect, and I agree with that. No leader is going to check every single block. However, there are some, you being a good steward, you know, if you lost a job, you had some stuff, you're working through it, that's understandable. But I do think that you have to have some checklist on you being a good steward, not of your own money, because let me just, I'm going to say it for what it is. If you're not being a good steward of your own money, I'm going to let you fill in the blanks, brother Dr. Dunlap.
If you're not being a good steward of your own money, then you cannot convince me that you're being a good steward over God's money. Or we can even say it like this when we're talking about from a church perspective, the money that the people of God have placed into our care. So it's important that we deal with this. And then those of you who watched us on the first night have already heard that we will be having a PRF Leadership Summit next year. It's probably going to be in October. So things are already underway, because the truth of the matter is, if some of you who are leaders are watching now, you'll pop in for a few moments in between cooking dinner, in between taking your bath, just got home from work. All that stuff is good, but if you don't sit down and get into a concentrated place, how do you expect for God to release what he has for you into your life if you never take the time to just slow down? And so we're gonna have this PRF Leadership Summit next year. Can't tell you everybody who's going to be on the roster, but I will promise you this. It will be individuals who are anointed and appointed and called by God for such a time as this. You mentioned 1 Timothy chapter 3, and I'll go back for those who were with us before. And one of the things that we said was this. When Paul wrote this to Timothy, he said, this person has to be, this bishop, this overseer, even if you've got to manage your household well. And then it said, if you can't manage your household well, how can you manage the affairs of the church? How can you manage the affairs of the church? And so I'm thinking about that. And the truth of the matter is, that is, I'm getting a lot of noise when you're in your car. Just mute yourself until you get ready to come back. When you are yourself. All right. So the truth of the matter is, nobody's talking, and again, I'm a leader. I'm in this thing as well. Nobody's talking about it as if you have to have all of your stuff 100% perfect. We're not talking about that, so we can go ahead and get that one out the way again for the third time this month. What we're saying is, if there's some areas in your life that you know you need to be doing better in from a financial perspective, it's up to you to be able to say, I need some help. You have to ask for the help. And I said this a little while ago. I said, you know, it's amazing, because the faith that we tell you, and again, I'm saying this to tell the people that they need to have, we have to be able to operate that same type of faith within our own households. We got to be able to do it. But if we can sit back and nobody knows how we're really doing, the devil just sucks up, just sucks that up, and it sucks the life out of men and women of God who are in leadership positions. Trust me, I'm telling you what I know. And for us, I'm glad that God gave us this topic tonight for the whole month, because enough is enough. I think I posted that a couple days ago on Facebook. Enough is enough. This is it, right? I may play that song a little bit. This is it. It's like, this is enough. We don't have time for leaders not to be in the best possible position that they can be in, and then standing up before God's people talking about you should be the lender and not the borrower. Okay, but you borrowing stuff from folk at 22% interest, that you telling them, well, what about in your own household? And so all this stuff, it matters, it's important. And this whole series, it has nothing to do with beating up anybody. We're saying, listen, let's get this stuff together, because the people are counting on us. We went to the hospital to visit somebody, just getting back. And it's amazing that a lot of times people will call on us when they're in the hospital, Brother Carson, when they're in that situation where, oh, my goodness, I the Lord is showing me something, like that light you see above my head. It's like, oh, my goodness, I'm seeing the light right now. Well, a lot of people don't get that light. The light has already been given in some of previous instances, like 2 years ago when the PRF came to your city, and he's like, no, I got this to do. Or somebody else presented something like in financial realm. And I'm going to tell you, it's amazing, because I try so hard, Brother Carson. I try very hard to make sure and impress upon every religious leader that invites PRF in to their household. I'm talking about to the church, right, to community. And I say, listen, you need to be there as well. And so sometimes I'm faced with this. Do I say, no, I'm not going to come? We're not going to send a team to your church because you're not going to be there? Or do we take the 13 or 15 or 25 people that say, listen, I want this, but you know what bothers me, Brother Carson? I want you to jump in if you can. When we go to a location and we do a legacy conference or we do a credit and debt workshop, whatever it is, and the leaders are not there, and then I hear about later what the leaders are going through, and I said, man, it's painful, because I said, you, that leader had an opportunity at that particular time to take what God has sent his or her way and to put this thing in place right now, and to be able to put this thing in place right now, because God knows what we're going to need later on. And so I'm big on, let's make sure that we are operating in the type of spirit that when these things get presented to us and we know they are of God, that we take advantage of. So, Bert Carson, did you have anything you wanted to jump in on?
Well, absolutely. I think that can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, you're good.
Okay. That the thing I think as a Christian, a lot of times that we operate in a reactionary mode. And so,
sure.
But when you start looking at Proverbs, and it starts talking about consider an ant, how wise they are and how they soar.
Yeah.
And so what we won't do is we won't get ahead of things and make sure that we're good. Like, think about it. The whole thing of Joseph becoming second in command in Egypt was about him being able to take a forecast that wasn't given to him. It was given to an ungodly man. Him take that information, mm-hmm. use his anointing, and be able to say, okay, let me get ahead of the game. And they had a strategy to save, and they had such a strategy to get ahead that when it came time of famine, not only were they good, they increased while everybody else was decreasing. And so I think that like, your money might be good now, but what do you do if there's an issue? You need to at least have that knowledge. And generally, like, I was listening today, they were talking about the different things that are available for soldiers, such as financial planning. And a lot of people, you could tell they weren't paying attention to it. So I stood up and said, hey, look, or like the emergency fund, I said, hey, look, I know y'all don't think about it. You guys are getting y'all nice active duty checks, and I got it. I said, but the thing that happens is that people get behind and they don't say anything to where it's around 2 or 3 months late. So that $500 that you probably could have stopped at the beginning, now you're going in there asking for somebody for $1,500, and more than likely you're not going to get it. I said, so not only does that person now lose their house or lose their car, guess what else they're going to lose? That security clearance. So you have to be able to be mindful that there are so many effects. So I do believe we as Christians that we've got to live full lifestyles, but we've got to be active. Like, for example, if I went to the church and said, hey, guess what, guys? We finna do John 3:16. They'd be like, what's that? We finna go run 3 miles in 16 minutes. Well, I know I can't do that. But the point being is that we won't talk about wellness, but then we'll have people come down, who's sick or what are you sick from? And it's to a point where, okay, well, you know, hypertension, a lot of that's dealing with weight and a lot of that's dealing with depression. You see where I'm going? A lot of times, you and I, before we got on the line, it was like some of these things, they're not singular things. They affect, they bleed into other areas. It's not just a one thing. It's not a snapshot. It's the movie, you know. So we have to get to that point where we are really looking and asking God for us to get ahead. Because when we're ahead and we got much, guess what we can now be? A blessing.
So one of the scriptures, when you mentioned something, I said, let me just go there. So I flipped to it. It's Proverbs 6, verse 6 through 8. And it talks about the ants. And it talks about how the ant has no prince and no ruler. And let me give you a visual for a moment. Because if you think about ants, ants are always leading as well as following. One or two little ants outside your front door. But when you really see ants and really notice it, it's because they're in a pack. And when you remember those old cartoons when somebody would be at a picnic or something, right? Or eating some food on the ground, like, with a blanket and being romantic. And then you see the ants come, and they come and take all the food away. They're following, but somebody's leading. So there's constantly this leader-follower aspect that the ant has. It's not about them going doing their own thing. So when I read the text, listen to this. When I read the text, it says, take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. I said I'm not going to beat up on anybody, but the truth of the matter is, if you as a leader are not being very, very diligent about planning and saving, if you're not doing it, that's problematic. Because when a time comes when you need and you don't have and you can't pull from it and the people ain't giving, so you can't go and try to get a raise so you can cover it, and when you can't do that, it's bad. As my man over in Fort Campbell, I believe he's in Fort Campbell, Sergeant Major Clay would say, that's bad juju. That stuff really just does not work. So listen, take a lesson from your aunts, you lazy bones, right? It says, learn from their ways and become wise. Truth of the matter is, I didn't learn, Brother Darrell. I didn't learn about saving. The only thing I learned growing up, man, I come in that era, my mom talked to me about savings bonds. That was it. That's all I knew about saving. That's all I knew about investing. Now watch this. Let me show you how this thing translates into some disasters. All I knew, that was all I knew. And let's say God at an early age, like they put on the obituaries, right? He received Christ at an early age. All right. But let's say at an early age, I came into coming to ministry. God called me to ministry at 19 years old. And then I become a pastor at 21. I have no concept at all about planning and saving because it wasn't brought in the household. The church I'm at, they're not talking about it. So the thing is, how do I lead others in this particular area if I'm not doing it myself? Listen, we can put it out there all day long, but I think Jesus had a word he said it a lot of times in the Bible, in the New Testament, right? He said, hypocrite. And so we don't want leaders to have other people to be able to say, you're a hypocrite. Listen, you're in this financial bind as a leader, but you've been talking about save your money and stack up your chips and all this kind of stuff. But Brother Pastor Dunlap, you getting a little, you got a flat tire, you can't afford to put a tire on your car. And this stuff, this type of chatter is the stuff that the enemy loves to hear, Darrell. I'm telling you, the enemy's like, they at it again. Church member talking about the pastor again. And I'm saying, this is all I'm saying. Can we just give the enemy less to freaking work with? That's all I'm asking. Can we give the enemy less to work with? Because at the end of the day, when that chatter goes outside of the four walls of the church, when it comes across Facebook, and you know what happens all the time, whenever a leader goes through something, it's a whole bunch of folk that got something to say about the leader. It don't matter how much I've done to help you, but let's think about this. Do they not have a right to say, well, doggone, Mr. PRF, You talk all the time about legacy, but you ain't got no insurance? Darrell, do the people don't they have the right to be able to say, this dude was a fraud? He talked all this stuff about legacy, but he died and didn't have a will. Come on, man. It's up to us.
Yeah.
This is not that part ain't the enemy. That's me. If I let that happen, that is me. And leaders, my colleagues, my friends, my brothers, my sisters, you got to know that this thing is on your head. Forget about the people. Forget about what the people say and all that kind of stuff. We got to be able to take care of our households. And if we can take care of our households, then we got the right to say something about your household. Go ahead, bro.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's that, well, I mean, it's like if you see somebody out of shape and having, I'll give you this. When you look at a P90X commercial or a fitness commercial, which picture draws your attention and motivates you, the before or after? And sometimes that,
right.
I mean, really. So we know, I mean, this is be real. It's the after picture that draws us. And a lot of times when we look at the difference, if it's a drastic jump, that even motivates us more to say, hey, this brother or sister has a process that works. And I think that same in faith, when you watch people, that's why David was able to build such a rapport with his people, and they trusted him because they watched him over time and they saw, hey, this was a shepherd boy that went out there and slung a rock and hit Goliath, and now here this guy is, he's running from his own son. He's doing all this, but I've watched him. So now when it came down to give that offering, they already knew that guy. They saw the before and they saw the after, and they were willing to follow that. And I think that we as leaders, I mean, in church, we're so focused on the anointing, and the anointing is important. But the thing is, you have to – seldom is the anointing just a singular thing. There's also, like Joseph, a spirit of excellence. There are also things we got to do. So I'm going to hit right back when you talked about, like, being a good steward in your home with your money and being a good steward with church. I want to hit that. Think about this. If I can't manage a home, let's say it's a $200,000 home, and let's say, you know, you have a normal, let's say $300 a month electric bill, it could be higher, you get all that. If I can't, and a car note, we got things, how am I going to sit there and manage a church that may seat 200 or 300, and the power bill may be like 700, 800, or 900, and y'all come up with strategies on how to reduce the power but not sweat the people out their church clothes and have folks' makeup running down? How do you get to a point where you manage a fleet of vans that you go and get the sick and elderly? How do you manage, you know, making sure certain repairs can be done and certain repairs can't? How do you manage is something we're going to talk about in a moment that you were saying. How do we manage what we do as a church? I would say something too. Seldom are you a good manager of money and a good not a great manager of money, but a good manager of time. Those generally do not go together. So when you start coming up with these things for people to do in the church and all that kind of stuff, you're staffing it in your head, and you're not sitting down with your staff to properly staff it for them to take a look at it and say what we can and what we can't do and what the people can and cannot do. And it just becomes this thing where you probably are suffering with some management skills. We can't even get to the money because you've got some things maybe you need to work on. So I'm going to pause right there.
So how can we help? How can we help other leaders tonight, right? What can we say? What can we do to help other leaders that are in that space, that are in this place where things are just not where they need to be? Listen, I throw out this scripture to us, and I talk about it often. If you've been in the Legacy Conference, if you've been in any of our workshops, you can just imagine it may not come out right away, but it's probably going to pop up. Somehow it's going to come up because it's in me so much. And it's Proverbs 11:2. First comes pride, then comes shame, but with humility there is wisdom. And I'm here to tell you, as leaders, the enemy loves to make sure and do everything that it can for us to be in a place of pride, in a place of shame. See, it's not shame at first. It's pride. A lot of times the shame comes because leaders have been prideful about where they are financially. And again, we talked about this last week. We understand. Listen, we get it. We get it that our circle is small, that the air is thin at the top, and we can't share this with everybody. But who says you can't, right? So it doesn't matter if it's in my circle, even within my small circle, right? If I got five cats that's within my circle that's with me that I can share stuff with, I still have to use discernment and sharing it with those who I call my inner circle. So it doesn't matter who it is. If you are going to God, say, listen, I got this going on. I can't pay my student loans. Church ain't doing so well. This real life stuff, y'all, trust me. This real life stuff. Listen, I know I got to pay that student loan because that student loan is like $585 a month. Listen, church ain't doing well. I was really counting on my money from the church, you know, to take care of my student loan. But look, offering ain't what it used to be. Okay? The truth of the matter is, that ain't the responsibility of the church anyway. You're basing paying your bills off your extra money. And Darryl, it was so much we talked about last week. I think last week we talked about, are you living off of your extra money? A lot of times for us as religious leaders, especially ministers, the money that we get, these honorariums, this somebody putting some money in our hand, that's extra money. Listen, we need to be honest with each other and say, listen, stop living off your extra money. Because let me say this. As soon as somebody stops putting some money in your hand, as soon as people stop asking you to go all over the place preaching and teaching everywhere, or I ain't going to say teaching, preaching all over the place, as soon as they stop asking you to come to that anniversary, listen, you came to that anniversary, they cut you, they broke you off with $900 for preaching that day. But next year, they don't invite you back because there's a new pastor. The new pastor wants somebody else to come. If you've set up your household, Daryl, based upon some extra money or anticipating some extra money, you are not being a good steward. And so I'm saying this thing because we got to deal with this thing from a spiritual warfare perspective and be able to understand what the spirit of the enemy is doing. You know what? I'm going to let that joker keep on going out there. Oh, he getting good right now. She good right now. She loving this thing, right? Everybody calling Dunlap. Everybody's calling Dunlap. Every other week, Dunlap going somewhere. Put that extra money on my application to buy a new car, and they will give me a loan based upon that. But what they're not going to do, my brothers and my sisters, is when that stops, they're not going to reduce your car payment because you no longer get called to preach everywhere. So we got to say, listen, what are you earning? That's it. If you earn $3,000 a month from your job, your expenses need to be based upon that $3,000 a month. Point blank, that's it. And listen, you started this off with talking about planning and saving. So if you're making $3,000 a month, and yes, that's your full-time job, but you're bringing home like $1,000 from the church. That money from the church, here's my question, because we talked about accountability last week. Accountability is three things in our stewardship course that we teach. I ain't going to tell them all, but one of them is accountability. And here's the deal. If nobody's helping you to be accountable, so if I see you, I'm like, man, Daryl, I know he makes $3,000 a month. All this money that he's getting from going all around the world preaching, what is he doing with that? Can I have enough love for you as my brother in Christ, as a fellow co-laborer, say, hey, man, what you doing with all this extra money? Because somebody needs to say something to somebody so they understand this is extra money. Now, if pastoring is your full-time job and this is the full-time salary that you get, if you make $3,000 from the church, then that's what you operate with. Again, you don't go and count on the money that you get when you go preach other places, even though it's still part of ministry. That's not wisdom. Let's think about this. Somebody who works at a job, and their job says, you know what, everybody's on mandatory overtime. The same wisdom that I'm giving to you as my fellow brothers and sisters who are in leadership positions is the same thing I tell to some of these folks that's working on these jobs. Things are good. People are not there like they need to be. Staffing is low. So they say, listen, we need everybody to be on mandatory overtime. You're going to get 15 hours of extra or 20 hours of extra over 20 hours of overtime every single week until further notice. Listen, do you know how many people actually run themselves out and go and buy a car? Go buy this? Go charge up this? Nah, that's not. So if I'm going to say that to folk outside of the church, I have to have enough love and care for my fellow co-laborers to say that's not how you handle business, right? You have to have somebody that's going to help you to be accountable. Like, listen, dude, you know you can't afford that Tahoe. What are you doing? Now, you may want to be nice about it and diplomatic and political or whatever, but listen, the people who know I'm just raw just like that. I don't have time to be sugarcoating stuff with you because on the back end, I got enough folks that I got to be praying for. We got enough folks that we need to be helping. So the truth of the matter is, this is me. If I'm wrong, if I'm biblically in error, somebody feel free to correct me. But Daryl, listen, Pastor Ware, listen. This is what Dunlap say. I ain't got time to be praying for you after you done got yourself in some foolishness when I advise you about what not to do in the first place. Listen, don't go get this. Don't go get this adjustable rate mortgage. And you go out and get the adjustable rate mortgage. And now your wife's trying to talk to my wife because she all mad and upset that y'all can get kicked out of the house. And I'm like, you messing up my personal time. It's Friday night. This is our date night. We ain't got time to be talking to you about this. But we got to show the love of Christ. I'm like, no, I'm going to show the love of Christ and turn over the table right now. Don't do it, bro. It's stupid. Do not do this. And then when you go ahead and do it, no, I'm not going to come over to your house and bless you. Now, I'm not going to do it. Everybody who know me, they know me. I'm doing this is love. I'm not going to come over and bless your house when I know good and doggone well you couldn't afford that thing in the first place. Are you with me, bro? I mean, we have to understand that you have to have some people. We talked about this last week. There has to be some individuals in your corner that just won't say, find it just acceptable that you just go out there and you do any old kind of thing and all willy-nilly with your money, and you a leader, and you standing before God's people, or we standing before God's people, as if it's okay. No, it's not okay. We need people that's going to say, listen, this ain't the right move. I've heard pastors say, well, you know, we don't want to say that. What the heck? We don't want to say that. So I'm going to watch you fall off the doggone cliff? What kind of love is that? I just don't believe Jesus is going to watch a joker walk off the cliff. Nobody about to walk off the cliff, Daryl. I don't see. That ain't the Jesus that I know to love. Just watch him walk off the cliff. No, that ain't loving my neighbor. That's not loving my neighbor as myself. If you see me about to walk off the freaking cliff, let me come. That's not going to preach. If you see me walking about to walk off the cliff, bro, I expect you, man. We done spent too much time in the trenches. We spent too much time on the phone. We done too much stuff with PRF. And if you just watch me walk off the cliff and don't do anything to stop me from walking off the cliff, you ain't a friend, and you got a misunderstood concept about love. I'm drinking some water in case you want to jump in.
Well, that is truth. I think that and the tone right now in the discussion, it could sound as if it's just an open rebuke. It's we ain't doing nothing right. It's negative, but it isn't. And I think that is that point of, you know, I think I saw something out on Facebook today where, you know, if a leader, if you want everybody to like you, then go sell. Being a leader, you basically this. If you want everybody to like you, go sell ice cream. And it's because of it's because of the fact that you are going to have to say some things, and so we. I mean, we have to have these natural discussions and not have sometimes the flaky pie in the sky wait for the pixie dust, because God doesn't use pixie dust. He used the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is a comforter, but the Holy Spirit has word in them, which also means that the word is like a two-edged sword. So with that means that God is trying to get us to a level, because if we watch what's going on in the world, guess what, folks? You can look at the book and say it's not supposed to get better. Jay, I told you almost 2 years ago, we're going to be here for a while. And so if you're going to be here for a while, y'all, then that means that now it's guess what? From my perspective, I'm certainly, you know, servants. I support my commander-in-chief. But you got a whole lot of other things that are out there that should not be your tunnel vision. I'm just going to be straight up. That's my opinion. My thing is you should be doing things to better yourself. This is a time for us to start businesses. This is the time. But it's also for the time for us. To me, what God is saying, it's time for us to get wise. It's time for us to start using some wisdom. It is time for us to get in order and leadership. God loves the bride. Jay, I was not sitting up here trying to bash the bride at all. That ain't this brother's heart and that ain't mine. What it is that, hey, he's coming back for a bride without spot or wrinkle. So all we're doing is breaking on our stain remover and our iron. And that's what we were trying to do is get ready and be prepared. We don't want to be like the 10 virgins where some had oil and some didn't. Mind you, they all had oil in their lamps, but some had extra oil. So that's what God is trying to sit here and get us to, is to this point where you are prepared. And right now, I'm not going to get into Revelation. Let's say right now, if the Antichrist showed up and said, you can't buy nothing unless you have the mark of the beast. You can't do nothing. Yeah. Most of you would be jacked up because that's all you know. So if they turn around and say, that's why we have to get to a point where we're the lenders and not the borrower, because they call on it, say, hey, you're going to pay this loan or you're going to give me your kid. So getting back more so to now, because those are things to come, is that how we operate is that, again, God's trying to get us wise, God's trying to get us in order, and God's trying to prepare us. And we have to be in that mode. We got to be when there's hurricanes that we can roll out and go down there and feed people and show the love of Christ as well as preach it, not just go down there and get folks to do the dying cockroach. We have to be able to get out there and say, hey, education system want to change? Not a problem. Brother Dunlap, let's go open a school. And we're not even sitting here playing around. That's the kind of stuff that God, Jesus was able to do. Look in the Bible and you can see that stuff. But right now, we are operating to a point where our leadership is suffering. And if you look at it, when your leadership suffers, the people, what did it say? You strike the shepherd and the sheep scattered? So that's kind of what you got to take. What we're saying right now is it is, and we're are dealing with money. We are dealing with leadership. Regardless of what people tell you, that goes hand in hand. I got to be as a leader to manage resources, and that means I got to know how to manage mine. And if I don't, I need to have somebody to help me.
So we have one more episode this month, brother, and we may just go continue a little bit longer on Facebook Live as well. But here's what I want to throw out a couple more checklist items. So if you've been with us the last two weeks, you know that I've been throwing out some things that are financial checklist items for us as leaders. Now listen. And it goes hand in hand. I can show you the paper where we wrote it down from last week. This is the notes from last week. And I was like, here, again, it's what it says. For those of y'all watching on Facebook, it says next week. So next week, I said, well, God, you're going to make us, you're going to put us where we need to put us. So here's the deal. One of the things that I wrote down last week, and I believe this is what God gave me for your checklist items, is when was the last time you took a vacation and it had nothing to do with church or ministry? I say the question again. No condemnation, just conviction if it needs to be. When was the last time you took a vacation and it wasn't related to church or ministry? So let me help you understand, because some of y'all don't see this, y'all don't see the separation of it. But if you go to the National Baptist Convention, USA, and you take your wife and you're in meetings and she's in a hotel and you connect, because you don't go to all the classes, so you all go out into town, and then, you know, you come in. If you got your wife there and she's not a pastor, that's not a vacation. I don't care that your wife took – or listen, I got to say primarily wife in the Baptist church. But let's say you took your spouse to a religious convention because she's going to travel or he's going to travel with you. That is not a vacation. The money – it's the money – that the church or the ministry like has given to me to go to this thing with the anticipation, hopefully, that I learn something, I gain something I can bring back to the ministry, back to the church. Listen, you're going for business. Here's how you know you're not on vacation. When you got to get up and go to meetings. I know y'all sometimes think I ain't deep, man. I do, because this stuff ain't deep to me. It's just, I just didn't grow up in a church where this stuff is. If you're in meetings, that's not a vacation. Listen, and can I be honest with y'all? Let me be honest with them, Darrell. I am guilty of going with family. They get to do this. And we don't, listen, there's a difference between three plane tickets and four. So if I don't have to pay for my ticket, and all I got to do is pay for three, why would I not take my family, right? I'm not saying anything is wrong with that. I get it. But the question is, when was the last time you have been on a vacation and it was not connected in no shape, way, or form? You ain't call up your boy or your homegirl. I ain't call up Pastor Ware like, hey, Pastor Ware, I'm coming to North Carolina to come check out my mama, right? So and since I'm going to check out my mama, you know, I'm going to come by you, you know, can I come by the church? Can you put me up, you know, put me up in preacher terms that, you know, can you let me preach that Sunday? Can you put me up? Nah, my wife ain't coming with me. My kids ain't coming with me. So I can go have to be somewhere on Sunday. If I want to hang out, listen, this is a good one right here, Darrell. If I want to hang out all freaking night while I'm gone, I should be able to hang out all night. If I want to ride around the town, I'm the city of Myrtle Beach. That's what I want to do. But if I got to get up and come and preach at Pastor Ware's church, I ain't on vacation, no matter how I try to slice it. Well, you know, the vacation really is from Thursday to Saturday, and Sunday's a travel day because, we're not fooling anybody. So, again, the question is, when was the last time you have been on a vacation. I need y'all to pay attention to that checklist item. I'm serious, because the truth of the matter is, when you ain't went on vacation, it's pretty much true that you're pretty much not practicing self-care the way you need to practice self-care. And oftentimes, it takes money to be able to go on vacation. Can I tell you, Darrell, listen, I just want somebody to say, Brother Dunlap, you are all the way wrong. I do not care. If you feel that I'm all the way wrong, be man or woman enough, put it online, say, listen, you are wrong. This is not, if I go and I take my family on vacation or take my family to the convention, I'm on vacation. Listen, that's fine. But I'm going to tell you, when you get back next Sunday, when I got to step back into the office and it's business as usual, that time that I just spent, I don't have another time that I can take another 3 or 4 days off. So, but why do people not go on vacation? And I'm talking about us now. This is us. And I say this because I know there's several people that are watching and there's several people that are listening through Blog Talk Radio still that are not in a religious leadership position. But here's the thing I want to impress upon you, is when you become a religious leader, this ain't stuff that they talking about. Listen, I graduated from 2 seminaries, a master's and a doctorate degree. This ain't what we talking about in seminary. I'm just telling you. Maybe somewhere in your seminary, but I can tell you from a lot of other folks that come from a lot of other seminaries, listen, it ain't being talked about there. So if it's not being talked about and you don't do it right now, if it's not a habit for you right now, what makes you think when all the chips is on your shoulder, when all of a sudden you plan on taking a day off, but sister such and such just had to go to the hospital? What happens when all those things happen? Then your vacation time goes away. But let me tell you something. Why do many of our religious leaders probably not go on vacation? Because of finances, bruh. That's it. I just told you. It's a whole lot easier for me to pay for 3 plane tickets than 4. So why would I not take up on that? But that ain't the thing that my children want to go to. They want daddy, right? I don't have little kids anymore, right? All are grown, but they want daddy. But I know it's because of finances. Let me tell you how I know it's because of finances. Again, no condemnation, but let it convict you. Because I see, and I have conversations with my colleagues that preach all this extra. Well, listen, man, I'm gonna preach this revival next month, so I'm gonna take some time off after. Oh, so you're only gonna go on vacation because you're anticipating to preach a revival, which you don't know how much money you're gonna get unless you already worked that behind the scenes with the pastor, your buddy, your friend, of how much you're gonna get. But that's what your vacation is based upon. You're making your vacation on money of secondary income. That's not wise. That's not wise. Why are you basing it upon that? Can you not save up money beforehand? Listen, when we can listen, it don't take $1 million to go on a vacation. You can go on a listen. I was looking the other day, Darrell, at going to Cuba. Some of y'all may look at me like I'm crazy, right? But a 7-day cruise to Cuba hit a couple other spots, but it was only like $300. I'm like, I'm going. I'm going before we can't go, right? So I'm going, even if it's just a 4-day. It was only like $200. Now, of course, you're leaving from Miami, but when I add it all up, I'm like, you know, I can do it. So if I want to do that, then that means I got to take what I'm bringing in, and I got to say what I bring in every month is what I bring in every month. And I'm talking about just from the primary income, not the secondary income. And I have to take that and say, well, how am I going to go on vacation with what this is in the box, the regular money? If I can't do it with that, say, you know what? I'll save up some of this secondary money for the vacation. Is there anything wrong with that? No. But if the secondary money, Darrell, is utilized for paying primary bills, then you'll never go on vacation, man or woman. You'll never go on vacation because it's not going to be there. So, brother, I got one more point, but let me ask you, Darrell, what's your thoughts on that, on vacation and the money not being there to go on vacation?
I'm big on – I remember one time I was working like a dog, all right, and it was – I mean, I was working. But here's the thing. I got to go to some of the nicest places for work. And what I realized that – though I was being able to go to nice places at work, you know, I got to go to D.C. and see stuff. Actually, I'm going to D.C. next week. What I found is that I was still tired. So now when I go on vacation, and I do make sure that I go on at least, take my family on at least two vacations a year, at least. And that doesn't mean there's not even many vacations in there, which you can do. It's that we go and we chill out, and it doesn't have to be duty or business related, because then, you know, as a dad, most of the time you're doing all the driving, and then you're still running around and people are doing stuff, and then, you know, your wife is there with the kids. So, you know, I've got they're getting a little older. But that's my point. I do think you have to have it. I think you have to have many vacations. You have to have vacations with your family, and you and your boo need to have vacations. Because if you don't, and y'all are not getting away, y'all are probably not getting it in, if you know what I mean. And if you that, I'm just telling you straight up.
Oh.
Then.
Wow.
Then you also.
Oh, my goodness. Man, that hurt. That hurt.
Seriously, so then, on top of that, you need to have it where you can go away for a moment because you need to decompress, and she can go away for a moment, a couple of days, and not have to worry. I mean, there's something valuable to be able to walk away and be able to go get somewhere and not have to do nothing, toss this phone in the bag and just go away. And then with you two going away and just, I mean, you know, lighting the fire, kicking some tires, and then, you know, fun stuff with your family. So you owe this. This is part of that thing that we. It's two things I've noticed is that when we talk about the Ten Commandments, that we as Christians fail horribly to take a look at. But I'm gonna deal with one of them, and that is we do not Sabbath. We just don't. So Sabbath means basically get some rest, but keep holy. I don't mean be up in the strip club making it rain or that kind of stuff. That's not what that means. That's why I say remember it. And to keep it holy where you're not out here doing whatever it is that you want to do. Now, of course, J.R., you're more of a biblical scholar than I, so you can correct that. But that's what I think we have to have time. Even God rested, even though he didn't need to rest. But the emphasis is that you have to have that. So plan that, and you got to plan that. And, guys, I would tell you, if you're living, look at your finances. If you're living to a point where you have no wiggle room, where you can't say a couple of dollars, and here's the thing, and then I'll be quiet. A vacation can even be something as simple as y'all going and getting some tents and going to one of these parks that's safe and getting in the tent and going and walking around. Some of this stuff is free. Or you have bicycles, y'all. Go get it. Ride your bikes. Go camping. Whatever. There are a lot of different things that you can do that is low cost. It doesn't have to be Disney World or something like that. But you can do it, and you should try it. And I'm going to say try it. And see how your family environment changes.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. See, listen, y'all, this is the type of wisdom that we need to have. And this is what I know. I know a lot of my friends and associates and colleagues really get a very big kick out of going to these events where there's a lot of preaching and going and excitement going on. Stuff we've been talking about the last 3 weeks now is not the most exciting thing for you to hear. What is God's wisdom? Let me just say it again. It's not the most exciting thing. Listen, it's not exciting to be able to say, doggone, I ain't been on vacation with my husband for women or my wife, men. I have not taken my spouse on a vacation or been on a vacation with my spouse in the last 8 years. That's not a good thing to feel, right? But here's what we say. Listen, no condemnation. We get it. We understand. Now what we do from there, that's what matters. You have to take the next step. And if you can't figure it out, ask somebody. I keep telling folks, listen, we're here. PRF is here. This is what I grind every day in this. And it's a lot of strategy. It's a lot of writing. And if anybody knows anything about writing, it doesn't come when you want to, when you want it to come. It comes when it comes. So I'm just like, listen, if somebody may need some help, bruh, actually trying to understand when is the best time to go on vacation. Bro, Daryl, listen, let me know if you want to pop up on the Facebook Live, and then I'll go ahead and and for those who are watching or listening on BCR, you may need somebody to help you figure out how to go on vacation. Go ahead, bro.
No, I was going to say, I'm going to attempt to do it. I just tried to a second. I do want to say this, though. I'm going to help the sisters out with this comment. And brothers, there is nothing sexy about taking your wife to the regional Baptist convention and say that's y'all getaway time. That is not hot at all. All right? So let's just go ahead and dispel that myth.
Listen, let me say this, because we grown. I didn't see anybody that's children watching this. Listen, romance is very critical in marriages, right? And so you think about this, and we're gonna get off the Baptist, right? I'm not a Baptist. I was ordained Baptist, but we can say Baptist, CME, AME, Catholic, whatever, right? If I, as a religious leader, am taking my wife, or if I'm a woman, taking my husband, and we're going on vacation, and I do this at the AME convention, the CME convention, the United Methodist convention, whatever the church convention, if that's where we're going, tell me that we can do everything we want to do, like we want to do it, in that environment. Now, I know some folks don't have no scruples. They do what the heck they want to do. But with your spouse, if you want to do some stuff that you just want to do, come on, man. You can't tell me that you're doing what you just want to do at these religious events as if you took your spouse to a cabin for a weekend, as if you went somewhere where nobody knows you, right? As if you say, you know, we're going to go on a cruise and we're just going to let our hair down. That's the stuff that I think we're talking about tonight is, listen, stop mixing this stuff up, because it just doesn't it doesn't work. And all right, so yeah, bro, if you can get on live, then I'll keep on going past 9 o'clock. But here's the other piece. We were going to talk about something else, but God led us here. So what we had planned for tonight, we'll cover next week. But here's one more thing I wanted to bring up. And this is starting ministry. And this may be a long conversation, bro. It may be. A lot of times, there's men and women that say, I know God called me to the ministry. I know God called me to pastor. Listen, Dunlap is not here to say God ain't called you for nothing. Because the truth is, God doesn't call perfect people. He calls people to his perfect plan. So let's go ahead and kill that one. So here's one thing I know. Advocate and Caden is saying when God calls you that you have to have all your finances in order. I'm not saying that. But here's what we know. We know God doesn't call perfect people. And he also doesn't call people with perfect finances. And so a lot of times men and women of God are getting called into ministry or get placed in positions in ministry. And this is not an area that they're strong in. This is not an area that they're excelling in. Matter of fact, some of them, plenty of them, their finances freaking suck, right? But yet God has called them or they've been appointed. So now you're there. Here's the deal. You have to be willing to do something different, because the longer you allow those things that you're bringing into the ministry to be there, it's only a matter of time before it comes around and it affects your ministry. And I'm talking about head on. So here's an example. Let's say calls you in, Carl, to the ministry. No, I'm not going to use Carl. Let's say brother such and such or sister such and such, this person hears, I know that God has called me into the ministry. I heard the voice of God. I had the experience like Saul, right? So that happens. You get called, but you know that at the time you heard God speak this to you, you was on the verge of bankruptcy. Well, you know, nobody really knows about what's going on. But yet God called you. God may have said, listen, I want you to do, I'm giving you a Genesis chapter 12 moment. I need you to go ahead and roll up off this job, and I need you to go ahead and serve me. Okay? But you know you got bills, and you know you got some credit concerns, because if you don't have any money coming in. So all those things are real life things that we got to wrestle and grapple with. But if you don't get any help, you're coming and you start this ministry. And as you start this ministry, nobody that starts a ministry, whether it's a church or a ministry, is comfortable. I don't care what comes out of folks' mouth. I'm telling you what I know. Is comfortable with, listen, we started this thing off with me, my husband, my two children, and the next door neighbor, and one person who knew me. So it's six of us, and we started in our living room. Nobody does that and says, listen, I don't care. We'll just be six for the next 50 years. That's not the normal way of thinking. Everybody's looking for growth. I don't care what people say out their mouth, brother. Everybody's looking for growth. Whether it's numerical growth, whether it's financial growth, whether it's spiritual growth, we all are looking or should be looking for some type of growth. So now, your stuff is just where it is. Your finances is where it's at. The guy called you in ministry. It ain't a big deal because you're in your living room. But by God, once you say, you know what, we got 15 people up in here. We need to get a building now. Okay. But you ain't dealt with, you've been in your house for the last 2 years, but you ain't dealt with the fact that you got some issues with your credit, but you ain't never dealt with the credit. But now you're stepping out there and you have to put your name on the dotted line. Or you want somebody else to put their name on the dotted line to sign a lease in this storefront. I'm not saying anything wrong with storefront, right? I'm just giving just one example. But you can't do it because you know your credit's not straight. But during the time that you had six people into the time that there's now 25 people, what did you take as the opportunity that God allowed during that time frame? So here's what I say. If you didn't take the time to work on your stuff, can you tell me and be honest with me that you were taking the time to help other folks under your leadership? I want somebody to prove me wrong. I want somebody to say, listen, my stuff was jacked up, but I still stood up before God's people and said, listen, my stuff is jacked up, but I'm telling you, you need to get your stuff straight. And then you went beyond that point, right, and just stopped saying what needs to happen. And he said, listen, we're going to bring PRF in. We're going to do Financial Peace. We're going to do Crown.org. We're going to do something because we're not going to allow this thing to get to a point where now all of a sudden we're not just 12 or 13 people or 15 or 20 people. Now we're 50 people deep, and now we're not worrying about how to pay this $700 a month for the rent every month, and a $250 light bill, and $100 for the doggone phone bill. We're not worried about that anymore because we got 50 people. But here's the danger: we always are looking for growth. What happens when the people come? Let me give you a perfect example. Let me give you a perfect example right here, bro. Let's say right now, a lot of our brothers and our sisters from North Carolina and South Carolina decide to come to Georgia, decide to go from South Carolina, Aiken, South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. They decide, you know what, stuff is just, we ain't got nothing back there anymore, so we're going to move. We're going to move in. So now we're going to come and bring all this to Augusta, Georgia, which is across the bridge in on the South Carolina-Georgia border. What about if you're in a place where mama's at, right, and you say, you know what? We're going to move to Fayetteville. We're going to be near Pastor Ware. And now people who don't have anything can't really contribute anything because they're trying to rebuild their lives. Because you chose not to help rebuild your own life, how can you help those individuals that come upon your tutelage? Because those people are hurting. I'm telling you, you just pay attention to what's about to happen over the next couple of months. These people up under your tutelage, they looking at you talking about my pastor. He sure, Pastor Dunlap, sure priest. Oh, he's the best pastor in the world. But yet, there's nothing there for the individuals to help rebuild their lives. You can't tell me that God is pleased with that. Because if you're not going to be honest, say, you know what? I'm in the same boat as y'all. I didn't have to be, but I'm in the same boat as y'all. Except I just didn't get flooded out. I don't really have too much. I can't even pay for a spare tire because my tire went out in my car. I don't have the money to get a new battery. Listen, the car's been working good, but if I come out there and I go, and it don't start, I don't even have money to put down for. Matter of fact, my credit is so bad that I done maxed out my credit cards. So I can't even go put the new starter on the car on my credit card. These are the things said, I'm telling you, when you start off with ministry, you got to be thinking 3 and 4 steps ahead. I keep telling you, I play chess like every day. Thanks to my man Ernest back at home. He got me playing chess like every day. I got plenty of chess sets in my home. I got one in the living room. I got a couple in the closet. I got one when I went to Iraq. I mean, I got chess sets all over the place. But now I'm playing every day. And now I'm starting to see, you know what? It makes a difference when we start making the right type of moves. And let me throw this one out here about chess. I lose a lot. Let me tell you why I lose a lot. And my man that I play against, like every day, he just laughs. And I say, listen, I turn it on when I turn it on. And so when I turn it on, I beat the brakes off him for like 2 games, and then I let him win a game. And then I beat the brakes off him there for like 2 more games or 3 games. And then I go into the place and say, you know what? I know how I won that. Come on, guy. I know how I won those other times. He didn't catch on, and I keep saying it to him. It's crazy, D. I said, you still ain't got it yet. And so I do the same things, and he don't realize because he's only focused on what he's focused on. And so I beat him, not the same way, but I use the same strategy every time I beat him. And then I say, I beat him. And so I don't just let him win, but what I do is I try new strategies. And so he beat me the other day, Darrell, right? He beat me the other day, fair and square, and I made a wrong move one time. And I was like, oh. And I saw it when I did it. I like aim off. I should have went to N5 or went to N4 or whatever. And I was like, uh-oh, that messes up my whole play, right? So now I got to try to figure out another way to deal with this thing. And then it was amazing because he beat me, and I'm like, okay, don't get cocky. Don't act like you're really doing something here, right? And, you know, we talk trash back and forth. But then he happened in that game. He beat me. Now, he had a queen, and he just wore me down, right? I mean, it really was no help for me. So he got 2 queens that he got on me, right? For those of y'all who don't play chess, I'm sorry. Right. So he got 2 queens. And so then he said, well, next time I'm going to get 3. And I said, no, I'm going to get 3. So now I was playing and I was trying to get 3 queens. If you don't know anything about chess, let's go look it up. If you got 3 queens on the board, man, you're crushing it. Trying to get 3 queens, but I forgot that I was trying to get 3 queens. And so I just beat him. Boom, checkmate. I said, doggone, I forgot I was trying to get 3 queens on you. Because now we're in competition. Then I did it again, beat him again. And I was like, okay, let me just stop trying to get 3 queens. So that next time, he beat me. And so what I keep telling us is we got to have the wisdom of God to help us to be strategic in these things. So starting out in ministry, one of the things I tell ministers who's starting up ministries and now they're suddenly become a pastor, or I talk to these brothers and sisters who we're starting the church or we start a ministry, I say, listen, you may not need everything that PRF offers, but there's some stuff that you can't go into this thing without having together. Because the truth of the matter is, you're starting something new. And what happens is when people are starting something new, whether it's PRF, whether it's this or that, people flock to these new things often. And I say, here's the deal. When these people start coming, I'm tying it back in now. When people start coming, you glad that we done went from 6 people to 12 to 25 to now 50. Now we don't have a problem paying the building, paying the rent and the bills. We don't have a problem with that. And now we thinking about buying a church in the next 3 years. But what about when the people come that can't help you with that mission? And you don't have any way to be able to share the experience of what you've done because you're still living in pride. Because you may still be living in shame. Come on, man. Come on, sis. That's not it. So starting off in ministry, starting a church, yeah, we got to deal with this financial piece. And this thing ain't got nothing to do with church being a business. I've said it before. I don't want to follow nobody. Church is a business. Because the purpose of business is to make profits, financial profits. It's not social justice. It's not socialism, social activities. It's not feeding the hungry. It's not the poor. It's none of that. Business, the number one thing in business is to make money and make profits. So, Burdell, you still with us, bro?
I am. I'm not going to be able to join Facebook Live because my internet is not being my friend at this moment for that capacity.
No problem.
A lot of people trying to use it.
Well, I'm tired.
Can you hear me?
I'm tired. I'm tired.
Hey, well, I tell you what, I will wrap this up. And I will say is that this. You talk about the calling to the church. I always look at it as Jesus when they're at the wedding and they run out of wine, and that Jesus' mama says, you know, basically, what's up, Jesus? And he like, why are you bothering me before my hour? All right, the thing I would say is sometimes when God has called you to preach, all you need is that word. Go preach. That's it. Mm-hmm. You don't need a church. You don't need a God's calling you to preach. Now, if he's calling you to start a church, that can be incremental in process, and you have, sometimes you have to let it. I would say don't get ahead of your resources. I mean, really, do not get ahead of your resources. And so if I got enough for two, I got enough for two. If I got enough for 10, I got enough for 10. If I got enough for 20, I got enough for 20. Because, I mean, we can sit back and say, well, you know, sometimes God just shows up. Let me tell you something. God took a little boy's lunch and fed thousands and still had 12 baskets left over. So you can't sit here and tell me that he can't multiply your resources. Come on, let's get
real with it.
He's preaching 1,000 with no PA system, none of that kind of stuff. These folks are out there, ain't no air conditioning, none of those things. And yet, so I'm telling you, when you're drawing, let me tell you something. You walk in there and start laying hands on sick folks, especially dead, and they coming up, you ain't going to have to worry about nothing. I will tell you that right now. But the thing that you have to, so begin to look. I promise you this, if you will posture your ministry towards being wise with your resources, and money is a resource because you also have to have that money to maintain what you have, and you use that resources, not sort of starting this church program, and you know what I mean by church program. That church program is to get more people in to get more money versus what JR is talking about, dealing with social issues, dealing with people, dealing with stuff, dealing with the people issue. Because I've noticed Jesus' ministry was a lot of dealing with the people issues, and much of that was healing. This is called out for good. People were sick. But dang sure people are sick now. So because of how we live. So my thing is, I'm saying as I wrap up is that, you know, all this stuff is inclusive. Like I said earlier, it's not a singular issue. It bleeds over. Let's just make sure that you just be a people-focused, be a foot-washing ministry, and it will grow to the size that you want it to be. And once it's full, like when the woman had to get those jars of oil or the jars to put the oil in, and once they run, then you got what you need. They stop pouring.
Because notice
the vessel wasn't what was rich, it was what was in the vessel. So you get more vessels. The oil will flow, but you don't get no more oil if you don't have no more vessels. I'm done.
All right, I'm going to say this, and I think I'm going to be done. Sister Carla, good to see you, my sister. So I don't believe that God is letting me go without bringing this piece up. And we can't talk for all night. We can't talk 5 or 6 hours, but I guess it's going to be one of those things I'm just going to leave you with. And so we just talked about starting ministry, right? How where are you positioned as you started? And if we had to ask a question, the question would be on this financial checklist is, where was your financial standing at the time that you started ministry? It's a reason why I'm asking that question. One, because you may have started your ministry, or the ministry that was started. You may have been the founder or the pastor or whatever that title was. That may have been 10 years ago in the case of PRF, 10 plus. That may have been 20 years ago in the case of such and such church. But now, the way things were back then, we're a whole lot more blessed right now. From people resources to financial resources to material, to how the spirit flows a lot better, to we are nowhere where we used to be 10 plus years ago when we first started PRF. But I'm asking that question because you have to be willing to answer that question, because a lot of times people can't see where you were because all they see is where you at. This right here, radio and Facebook Live, is not where we was at 10 plus years ago. We're in a different spot right now. And so the ministry is a different spot, but I'm not asking about the ministry. Please understand what I'm asking. Where were you when you first started the ministry? Where were you when you were first called into ministry? Because again, people need to be able to, need to really know where we were, not where they see where things are good right now. Well, you got big PRF, they got two radio shows, and it costs to do radio. Oh, PRF, they travel all the time, and Delta ain't giving us free tickets. Southwest ain't giving us free tickets. Oh, well, listen, we get discount on rental cars, but they ain't free. So at the end of the day, we don't need to be giving these misconceptions, Sister Mary, to individuals believing that things are a certain way. Because when somebody starts a ministry and all they see is where we are right now, I need to say, no, for 7 years, we didn't ask anybody for a dime the first 7 years of PRF. Nobody. We ain't asked nobody for no registration fees. We ain't asked anybody to give us any reimbursement for any travel. It was nothing, nothing, nothing. Everything was self-funded by the Dunlap household, point blank. And somebody needs to hear that starting off in ministry. But if those of us in religious leadership positions can't be honest and open, talk about transparency last week, cannot be honest and open, or let me change the way I'm talking. My prayer is that more of us will be honest and open to say, listen, if I didn't put a check in, it wasn't no money coming in. So I wasn't nobody. If I didn't put the check in, nobody, there was no internet because I had to do it and God had to provide for it for 7 years. So other folks would be like, man, we just can't think we're going to be right where Dunlap is right now. Nah, this thing wasn't easy. So we want people to have that have these living testimonies from other folks that have walked some similar journeys, because why is that not a part of a testimony? I don't hear nobody talking about that on New Year's Eve when they go through testimony night on New Year's Eve at watch night services. Nobody thought about that. But yeah, somebody's going to hear, yeah, this your year. Somebody's going to hear, God's going to open up that ministry for you. Yeah, here, this is the time for you to go ahead and step out there. And then you got folk running out there just not in a good way. Not in a good way. And then the shame and the pride comes in because nobody knows that it was really not good starting off. And now we're not going to say, you know what, we're just going to go back to the house, all 50 of us. We're going to leave this storefront. Listen, lease is up. Yeah, we can't do that no more. So we're just going to go back to the house. Come on, how many folk going to really follow it? Well, here's what I say to you that. When Jesus said in John chapter 6, if I'm not mistaken, he said, you got to eat my flesh and drink my blood. He had a whole bunch of disciples. And they said, this saying is too hard for us. And then the Bible says that they left him. So the truth of the matter is, let them leave. They weren't true disciples anyway. Let them leave. Because the truth of the matter is, you want true folk around you. And then they left the 12. And Jesus was like, y'all going to leave too? No, we're not leaving you. You're the one who got the keys to eternal life. Why? No, we're not. We here with you. And that's the type of folk that you want to have, because that's what's going to make or break you. It's having those type of folk on your team. So listen, Dale, thank you for being with us again. I had to be crazy to think that we could follow our normal 30-minute time slot for something like this. I just wasn't thinking. And So let me say this last piece. I'm trying to go, Darrell. Starting ministry. I'm going to say this about starting ministry because a lot of y'all that's already established in ministry, y'all ain't trying to hear it. So starting ministry, we'll help the ones that minds may be in a different spot. Starting off in ministry, you need people to help with certain things in the church. I'm telling you. Let's get these credit checks done. Trust me, call us. We'll help you. We'll help you. We can get the stuff ran for you. But, Darrell, listen to me, bro. I'm telling you, it's on the checklist. When you bring new people into the ministry, do you run credit checks? Oh, Dunlap, you're bringing the world into this. Okay. Yeah, I guess I am. Because when folks are filing bankruptcy and going through what they're going through financially, with as much debt as so many people actually have, especially in leadership positions, you're doggone right I'm going worldly on you. because ain't nothing in the Bible say that you got to do anything like that. So it's strictly worldly, but it's wisdom as well. So let's not think and act like everything that we do that is not in the Bible is worldly. No, some stuff is common sense and some stuff is just the wisdom of God. So here's the thing. If I don't have the courage starting the Daryl, are you still with us, bro? Because I may need some help on this.
I'm still here.
We started ministry today. If I can't get you to allow me to be able to do a credit check on you, that says something about my leadership up front, because why can't I influence you to allow us to be able to see where you stand just so we can make sure that we don't have anything to worry about should I have to put certain responsibilities into your lap? Let me ask it like this. And some of y'all have never been in the military, right? So forgive me. But, Brother Darryl, if you're going to go work in the G section, G1, 2, 3, and 4, at headquarters, there's no way in the world you working in G whatever without having a security clearance. Am I right?
You're right.
So the reason that we're doing a security clearance background check on you is because we, as the government, want to make sure that if there's anything out there, we're not saying it excludes you from doing what you're doing in the G section, but what we're saying is we want to make sure that we have an understanding of where it is and actually have the opportunity to have a conversation with you when we see that, if this was your case, but whoever this fictitious person is, right, that person has all these, has all these collections on their credit report. We want to give you the opportunity to say, hey, what's going on with this, right? Is there a bigger problem here? Is this just the tip of the iceberg? But we also want to give you the opportunity to say, listen, I need some doggone help. Listen, I know I can do the job, but I need some help right now. Or, listen, this is a result of a failed marriage. Or this is a result of going to a one-income household. There's explanations for a lot of these things. But here's the thing. If we can't have that conversation, why in the heck am I going to put you over the finance room? I know I done stepped on somebody's toes. We got folks working in finance room, and you got leaders that have no idea where the credit standing is of those individuals. Go back to 1 Timothy chapter 3. For a man that can't run his own household well, how can he manage the affairs of the church? I'm telling you, man, this thing, we got to deal with this. So that's why I bring this up. We're starting off. Let's do this so we know what's there. Because the worst thing that could happen in the world, because think about this. When I hear and read about stories in the news about individuals taking money from the church or taking money out of ministry or doing all this stuff, I ask those type of questions. I say, let me ask you a question. You know, I maybe watched it with somebody or you see it on Facebook and we're talking. I said, I wonder if this individual already had some propensity for stealing because they weren't in a good financial situation, but because this person was the son of such and such or whatever the reason was to put this person in position. Listen, ain't but three of us, so one of us got to be the treasurer. Really? One of us got to be the treasurer because it ain't but three of us, so I guess it's you, right? Because I'm the president. My wife, you know, or my spouse is the secretary. So somebody got to be the treasurer. Come on, no. We got to remove all instances of improprieties that could possibly be there. And this is just using the wisdom of God. I'm telling you, when I look at credit reports and I see 19 collections on it, and it's crazy because I have conversation with folk like this, and I won't call folk out, but I'm having conversation with folk, and we're also talking about what they do in the church. And I'm like, so I'm not being judgmental at all. What I'm saying is I know because I'm sitting across from this individual, Brother Darryl, and I know that they got some issues. But the leadership, where's the discernment? Sometimes you ain't even got to use discernment. Can we just look and see what's on paper? And I know that doesn't tell the totality of it, but we teach a course in PRF, and I'm gone. And it's called Credit Character. Credit and Debt are First Cousins is the course, but we have a series of lessons that's called Credit Character. And in one of the lessons we talk about, is one of the parts of it is reputation. And so it matters what your reputation is to the world. You're trying to draw folks from the world, but you got a bad reputation with the world because of how your credit standing is. You don't think we need to deal with that in the church? But yeah, we're going to start imagining things that it's just going to go away. It's not going to go away. Those type of things, it festers. And the enemy just sits back. I'm telling you, the enemy just sits back, Daryl, like this, like, yeah, I'm going to wait till they get about. You know, I'm going to wait till they get in that new building. Then I'm going to throw some little breadcrumbs out there because this stuff has been going on the whole time. But it ain't never, it's not important. And here's the thing. Just do it one time. At least you know. You can say as a leader, listen, I have an understanding. You got to know that I'm not bringing anybody into PRF to deal with money, and I ain't checking their credit first. What, are you serious? What kind? So I'm not going to check your credit, but yet we're going to let you have access to addresses, telephone number, email addresses, financial data, all stuff that can be used for identity theft. But we have no idea how you manage your own credit. And that's just one area. So listen, Burdell, any final words, my brother? Y'all got me tired. Y'all got me tired tonight.
Nope. Just want to say thanks to those that have watched, and hopefully your spirit has been lifted by the conversation.
Amen. So listen, we'll be back with you. I just imagine we'll probably be on Facebook Live again. So yeah. 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday, PRF table. Come join us again. Again, we may not be on Facebook Live, so if we're not on Facebook Live, which I think we probably will be, but know that you always can catch us at 347-215-7934, 347-215-7934. Lock that in your phone. That's the number for the PRF table. All the time, that number does not change. And let me also tell you that tomorrow we'll have Jashawn Franklin, fitness enthusiast. She will be on Your Health is Your Wealth tomorrow. Kimberly Silas will not be there, so we'll have a guest host in her stead. Again, that is every first and third Friday at 2 p.m. This monthly series on her show, still on Blog Talk Radio, still on the PRF table, is how your health affects your wealth. I can promise you, I went and picked up some stuff yesterday, and I'm probably going to be on the show tomorrow as well, but I picked up some stuff. It's called apple cider vinegar with mother. So I was looking at my wife like, what the heck is mother? And she's trying to explain it to me. And I was like, oh, and what mother is, my understanding, is all the stuff before it tastes like the regular vinegar that most of us would probably take and put in food. And that thing, so we had our niece over here the other day. And I was like, it was yesterday. So I was like, come here, spoon of it, right? She said, take a tablespoon. But I took a teaspoon. I said, hey, Obi, you might need to take this. Man, she was sitting down about 5 minutes later. She's like, Uncle Dunlap, this thing got my stomach hot. Oh, my goodness. I just laughed. And I took some today, and I said, but you know what? Reading up on it, hearing about it, I said, you know what? These are some of the things that we can do for preventive measures. So we got financial talk on the PRF table, and then we got Your Health is Your Wealth talking about how your health affects your wealth. Come on, y'all. God is putting this stuff out here for us. So we can do better about our bodies, our temples, our finances, our stewardship, all the way around. That's it. That's it. 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Your health is your wealth. Again, the same number, 347-215-7934. I encourage you to go and check out the website, prfministry.org. Go look at the calendar. When you look at the calendar, you will be able to see all of the places that we're going to be. We have a very busy October. We're going to have a little bit of a break in November, and then, of course, we shut down in December. And then in January, announcement will probably be made next month. But, man, in January, this thing is coming. The roof is coming off, and that's no pun intended. So just be ready. Listen, God is trying to set y'all up for some things, and we just want y'all to get it. So with that, God bless y'all. We're going to go ahead and shut it down. Help somebody. Tell somebody about the PRF table. You know, you may not catch everything that we're talking about. You may not catch everything we're talking about. Sorry, I ended on the live all of a sudden. But we're signing off on Blog Talk Radio. So God bless you. Peace.